so nice to have you guys here. We're so excited to have you. It's a brand new year, and it's going to be a great year. I was thinking about changing up the pep talk intro this year, and then I thought, no, I like it so much, we're just going to keep it. not everything's changing for 2016, but we do have a lot of fun things that we've got on our agenda this year. So we're really excited to see everybody here for the first pep talk of the year. So I hope you've had a good 2015. I hope that you had a good December and spent time with family and friends, maybe got a little bit of writing done, and are all ready to, you know, dive into this year and all that it has for us. And so I am I'm excited to have you guys here tonight. I'm very excited to have Beth Vogt with us tonight. Thank you, Beth, for being here. Rachel is actually on the road. She's in Nashville for a board meeting tonight, so she is not able to join us, but that's okay. Beth is here, and she's going to help us work through strategic goal planning. We're going to be talking about how to plan an amazing writing year. Now, I want to add that this is something I've been doing for about 10 years, and it's one of my tricks to getting a lot done during the course of the year. And I'm fortunate in that I was thinking tonight as I was putting together our talk that I'm sort of like Tom Selleck in that old his movie Magnum P.I., right? In Hawaii, when he got to start, right? Remember when he'd be like running from the dogs and he'd be like trying to open the door and he'd say, "Don't look at the dogs, don't look at the dogs, you know, focus on what you're doing." Well, that's a little bit like me. Like when I get into a project, I'm so tunnel vision. I'm like, don't look at the distractions. Don't smell the food that's burning. Don't listen to the children that are screaming in pain around you. Just focus on the project. And that's maybe not the best thing, but that's technically my mindset. And so that is, you know, I have a personality that focuses pretty well. But even if you don't focus really well, I'm hoping that this plan will help you figure out how to focus and allot time and get your projects done. So very excited to have you guys all here tonight. This is sort of an interactive plan. I'm not going to teach you as much as I'm going to talk through this. And I'm hoping that you guys will kind of follow along. And if you have questions, put them in the chat. Beth is there, but I'm also here to answer, and we can help together, and we'll just kind of help you sort this out. Now, if you have questions regarding this or even how to get it done after this, that's not a problem. We'll have a Q&A time afterwards, or you can always email me, and I do have a couple other pep talks planned this year. We've kind of divided the courses up into professional, getting stuff done, and craft this year. So we have a couple of other cool pep talks that are coming up that will help you figure out how to, we're going to talk about how to write a series, and we're going to be talking a little bit about episodes and different kinds of series that are out there. Plus, we have another pep talk coming up called Impactivity, about how to make an impact with your words and your life and this sort of thing. So this isn't the end, but this will help you kind of line up your thinking. All right. Terry S., are you supposed to pay attention to the screaming kids? It's up to you, Terry, really. If you're ever interested, my daughter wrote a blog once called The Real Life of Susan May Warren. And it was just one blog post, but you may want to Google it later. It is actually quite hilarious. And I think she wrote it when she was like 16. Anyway, it was a little funny too. All right. So yeah. All right. So get your pens and paper on. I think we have, by the way, I did send out a link with the blast that had our PDF that you could download and print, and it has these questions on it. So if you haven't gotten that and you want to like write it in, if you're old fashioned, like to write it in with a pencil or whatever, that's, look up that and quickly print it off or whatever. And hopefully that will kind of help. But however you sometimes I like to, actually what I do is I start a new journal every year. I have a personal journal and a professional journal, and I would put these questions in my professional journal and I would start to journal through them. And I like that because I can track my year, and everything I learn I put into my journal for that year in my professional journal, and I tab things, you know, and I keep it pretty organized. So, but then I can go back and go, oh yeah, I remember that, you know, in 2007 or whatever, and I can kind of go back and look at my notes, and I love that. So that might be something that would help you guys to keep that professional journal. But I really love always starting with me, because I've often talked about how, you know, on the writing journey, if you have not been changed by this journey, you've missed the point. And I, not to get all spiritual with you guys here, but that there is that sense where our writing is a facet of our lives that helps us grow as human beings. And if you're a Christian or a person of faith, it also helps you grow your faith area because you see God show up in your writing. And for me, that is it. That is really why I write, because for me, I can't not write. I love to write, but it grows me as a person. And I think I'm a better human being because I'm a writer, and it makes me dive into lies I believe and truths that set me free. And I'm so needy when it comes to my writing. I need that faith element to help me go. So for me, I like to look at who I am as a person and think through that. And because I really feel like that's sort of our goal. The writing is great, and it gets us, you know, it impacts the world, but it really should change us. So I always start with last year, and I say, did I have a word for last year? Excuse me. And what was it? And my word from last year actually came from, I'm going to pull it up here just a second. It was not a word. It was actually a verse. Mine was from Isaiah 43:19. And it said, see, I'm doing a new thing. Now it springs up. Do you not perceive it? I am making a way in the wilderness and streams in the wasteland. And for me, knowing what my word is helps me figure out how to think about my life during that course of that year. It will help me in my writing, but it also helps me to sort of understand what's happening in my life for the year. So because I had that, I went through a lot of changes last year. We ended up moving. We ended up, we lost we said goodbye to our dog. I said goodbye to my mom. So a lot of things like that happened last year. So it's, you know, if you haven't got a word or a verse for last year, no problem. Not a problem. It just helps to kind of think through, okay, how did your life change according to that word or that verse? So moving on from that, I also like to look at my biggest challenges personally, emotionally, and spiritually. And the reason is that I like to see that I've overcome them. And so one of the things is we always are so hard on ourselves. We say, oh, I didn't get this done, and I didn't get that done. And we start at the top of the year and we go, oh, we didn't accomplish these things. But we really need to flip that over and go, wait, let's look at what we did accomplish. How did we grow? What relationships did we repair? What big emotional issues did we tackle? You know, because we need to start out with a little bit of, hey, I did pretty well given the situations that I was in. I was talking with Beth before the show started, and we were just talking about the fact that I'm about 6 weeks behind in my writing. Well, that's because my mom passed away at the beginning of December. But that's okay, because I built great relationships during that time, and I honored my mom during, you know, the things that she needed to get done, and I helped my dad. And so I didn't look at that by going, oh man, I failed my deadlines. What I looked at was, oh wow, I did the right thing. I prioritized correctly, and I knew that I'm going to make up that time in other ways. So let's start with positive things, right? So let's talk about what some of your challenges personally, emotionally were last year. Beth, do you have anything you want to share about any challenges you had last year, and then maybe something that turned into a victory?
Some of my challenges last year were number one, I was on deadline nonstop, and that's a challenge. And I was also dealing with some health challenges. I had frozen shoulder.
Yeah.
That wasn't planned. And it really wrecked my sleep. And when you're not sleeping, I don't really feel all that creative when I'm in chronic sleep deprivation. So I'm chronically sleep deprived, but I'm on deadline. So I have to still be productive. So that was some of my major challenges. And while I'm on deadline, I decide to hand in my novel, but then tell my editor, actually, I need to basically rewrite that novel about 75%. So I take it back.
Right.
Remind me not to do that again. But actually, I'm glad I did. It was the right thing to do.
Right. And that's the thing, is that even though you had the frozen shoulder, and I know you weren't sleeping, you knew that was the right thing to do, and you completed it. You did it despite all of that. And so it wasn't like you just turned in the novel and went, eh, it's fine. You said, no, I know I can do better. I know it can be fixed. And so I'm going to fix that. And so your victory was not settling for that, not letting the pain take you down, but rather rising up to write that great story. So that's a huge victory. Plus, I know you've also just, it's been crazy. Your deadlines are nuts so this year. And so have been crazy. So it'll pay off next year when you have so many books that come out. So that'd be good. So yeah, so that's great, Beth. And so you guys just take a second, and if you don't have time right now, just, you know, bookmark it and go, I'm going to look at what I did last year, and I'm going to declare some victories. And if you have a victory that you can declare, put it in the chat so we can cheer you on, because that is a, it's always great to start out with a victory as you start your 2016. So, oh, I love it. Candy said that her word was balanced because she was ready to launch her debut and didn't want it to take over her world. And then it did, but it launched. Very good. Very good. And that's excellent. I think that it's always, it for me, the word is a heads up. So let's think about that for this year, 2016. Do you have a word for this year? I think it's, you know, it can come from many different ways. It could be scripture, it could be a song. Oh, this is your word. What's your word, Beth?
My word is prosper.
Prosper. Oh, I love that.
But it's interesting. It's from 1 Samuel 18:14. And if you go back to what that means, prosper means to act wisely.
That's interesting. That's not what you think it means.
No, no. So I'm looking forward to digging into that meaning of prosper, mm-hmm. acting wisely in 2016.
Oh, I love that. I can't wait to see what God does with that and how you apply that to the year. That's going to be fantastic. My word is vitality, believe it or not. And so that seems like a strange word, but I've already seen how God is applying that word in my life, and just what does it mean to have vitality in my life? Even if you know, you can have vitality even when you're waiting for things, even when it feels like there's darkness that goes on, you can still have vitality. So that's, you know, kind of interesting. I think it's career, health, family, finances, all those kind of things. So good. We have some others in here. Jenny said her word is consistency. That's excellent. Joni said that her word is align. I love that, align with God's word. Donna said limitless. Oh, I love that. The same spirit who raised Christ Jesus from the dead dwells in me. That's fantastic. Focus is Candy's, because her priorities get off balance. That's really good. Joni said that she survived her move and remodeling despite pain and fatigue. Well done. Well done. Moving is just, I moved this year. It's just huge. Jean is authentic. Yeah, it's probably going to be a stretching year, Jean. That's great. Angela was overcoming. She had a stint placed in the spring. This word is blessed. Oh, that's great. So excellent, you guys. Okay, so just, you know, ponder that. You can't, you know, we can't ponder it all in 5 minutes. So I would encourage you to take that, soak in it, figure out, like Beth did, what does it really mean, and start looking for it every day. That's what I've been kind of doing. What does vitality look like today for me? All right. Now let's talk about writing. All right. So you can do this with all areas of your life, but I like to, obviously I'm going to take it to the writing life because that's the biggest kind of area of my life, my biggest passion. And so I was like, again, to start with the things that I'm good at. Right. So what are the three top areas of the craft you feel you are your strongest? And the reason is because, of course, we want to be strong in all things. But the reality is that there are people that are just fantastic at story world. There's others that are fantastic at suspense, and that, you know, or they're fantastic at character ability. And that seems to be their strong point. And there is nothing wrong with capitalizing on your strengths. Right. So I tend to think that my strength is this character building in terms of family units. So I do really well when I create a team or a family and I have them interact in a very realistic way. That's my strength. Now I'm pretty good at story world. I think I'm pretty good at emotional layering, but I'm really good at that whole character building thing. All right. So Beth, what do you think is your strengths of your craft?
I think I'm good at dialogue. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of my strengths. I think I've improved with Story World. I've definitely moved from four walls, a ceiling, and a floor.
Good. Yeah, so, absolutely. That's fair. And your writing is very tight and beautiful. I think you're a very beautiful writer as well. So that's good. So good. So Mary says, out of the box. Very good. Very good. And so think right now, what are your three top areas? And it's okay if you think, like I could even easily say, if I thought one of my top areas was plotting, which I don't necessarily think it is, and I've been working on that, I could easily go, yeah, but James Patterson is a whole lot better. And it doesn't matter. James Patterson is not writing my books. So I need to focus on what I'm good at. So don't compare yourself to anybody else right now. Just look at your own writing and see where you feel you're the strongest. Now, here's the thing. We always need to be like rising to the top of the pile, right? So you can't possibly master all three of these at once. So we're going to just take one and you're going to say, I'm going to master that one. Now, excuse me, again, like for me, I'm pretty good at creating groups and these relationships, but I think maybe I could even be better at it. So I'm looking at, or, you know, at different kinds of relationships, you know, work relationships, family relationships, and how do they build them? And I've been working a lot about the emotional growth of a relationship and this sort of thing, trying to really get at the top of my game when it comes to building those relationships, because for me, that's where I'm going to be diving in as a writer this year and really starting to develop my skills. So look at your list and say, okay, what is it that I am good at and what can I become better at? It doesn't have to be the thing that you're the best at, but just one of them. Say, I'm pretty good at Story World. I'm going to be better at Story World. I'm pretty good at emotional layering. I'm going to be better. So the idea is that you're going to take that one and you're going to nudge it up a little bit, really focus on it, and so it can become your hallmark. I'm a huge fan of historical writers. One of my favorite new writers is Laurie Benton. I don't know if you've ever picked up her stuff. That's just fantastic. And she's fantastic at Story World. And she's great at characterization and everything like that. But she's fantastic at Story World. And so one of the things that I do next is I say, okay, what is my weak area? I say, what am I not so great at? And we all kind of know what we're not so great at, right? And now we're going to, and you might have like eight things that you feel like you're not great at, that, and that's fine. But now you're going to say, I'm going to pick one and I'm going to work on that one. That's where I'm going to invest this year, right? And so getting back to Laurie Benton, I'm going to say to myself, I recently read one of her books and I'm like, oh, she's so fantastic at Story World. I need to be better at Story World. And maybe that's the area that I think I'm pretty good at, but I could do better at. All right. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, I'm adding Laurie Benton to my books that I'm going to read this year. So let me back up a little bit. So we look at our weak area, look at our strengths, and we look at our weak areas, and we pick one strength and one weak area that we're going to work on. And now we're going to say, okay, how are we going to work on these strengths and these weaknesses? How are we going to make them stronger, right? And so we're going to start with actual writers. We're not going to go right to theory yet. We're going to go right to our writers. So we're going to look at, what books did you love last year? And the reason I'm doing this is because we all have authors that sing to us. You know, we love their writing. And the reason we love their writing is probably there's something about it that we can accomplish, we understand, and that just kind of makes us go, wow, this is great. Now, it could be above your level. I've read books where I'm like, oh, I'll never write that way. But then what I do is I sit down and I go, I'm going to figure it out. And I start to read their words and I start to figure out how they put together sentences or plot their stories or create their characters or, you know, build in that emotional arc. And I go and I start to analyze what they are doing. Now, here's the thing. If I look through the books I love this year and I picked 10 or 5 even, and they're all from different authors, I might get confused, because what happens is each author has their different style. So what I would suggest to you is that out of those books, what author excelled in the area that you need to work in? All right. So again, if you needed to work in Story World and you were writing historicals and you liked the way that Laurie Benton wrote, you'd probably want to pick up all of Laurie Benton's books. Because now what's going to happen is you're going to learn that skill from one voice, as opposed to like voices all over the place. Now, it doesn't mean that you're going to never learn another voice. It's just that you're going to focus on that for a little while. Once you understand those tenets, then you'll go to another author that writes great Story World, and you'll start working on what they're doing, and you start analyzing those. And that way you're focusing on the different skills that each author brings to the plate. So, go ahead, Beth.
Okay, so this is kind of begging the question, but this means as a writer, you have to take time to read.
Right.
And one of my frustrations last year being on deadline was I didn't take time to read. I read a few books for endorsement, but my own reading, both for pleasure and both for improving the craft, was minimal. And that was also frustrating.
Right.
So one of my goals as a writer this year is to read more. And one of the things I did was I signed up for the Goodreads Reading Challenge and made a specific goal of how many books I'm going to read in 2016. My hidden goal is I actually want to double that number. And I made a commitment now. It's out there. And I've told it to a couple other people. But that's one of my, you have to make a commitment to read. And then as a writer, I'm also reading not just for pleasure, but to improve my craft. And I'm widening what I'm reading. Like, I'm reading the book The Martian, which is not a book that I would normally pick up, but I'm intrigued by that book because it was an indie book that has become this blockbuster movie.
Right, right.
I'm just reading that. I don't care for all the language, but it's intriguing. It's an intriguing book.
I love that. And I've often shared that I read a book every weekend, and it's usually not a writing craft book. And so I actually read I read a book for pleasure on the weekends that if I like it, I'll add it to my learn from this person pile. And then during the week in the evenings, I read a novel about from someone I'm learning from. Right. So I've been reading Diana Gabaldon's books for about a year now. They take about 10 years to get through. But, you know, I'm just reading a little bit at a time because she does story world so well. And so, you know, that is, Beth is exactly right. You have to be a reader if you are going to be a writer, because you have to, I know it takes time, guys, but it's part of your learning experience, part of you growing as a writer. So read widely, but then pick one that's going to help you develop as you, that particular skill. And it might be like Beth might be like, oh, I love The Martian because I love the tension. Okay, I'm going to put that in my Learn How to Write Great Tension books, you know. And I don't know that he's got other books out. Maybe he does. So maybe you read more of his. But if you don't, try to find another book that, you know, has good tension if you're trying to create tension or whatever. So the idea is that when we dilute our focus and go, I need to learn dialogue and story world and emotional layering and fight scenes and romance and, you know, whatever. We get a little bit, it's a smorgasbord, but we never really dive in and get the whole skill. And I'm going to tell you right now, you're going to learn for the rest of your life. I'm still learning how to write. And a good writer, in my opinion, always continues their learning process. So you don't have to get it in all at once. Start. I mean, I'm going to tell you right now that I'm a much better writer today than I was 10 years ago. 10 years ago, I was a pretty good writer, but I certainly didn't understand what I do now. But that was okay. I was a pretty good writer, and then I started focusing on, you know, one thing and then another and another, and pretty soon I added to my repertoire and I got better and better. So, and Beth did that too. Go ahead, Beth.
Okay, so two questions. You recommended an author named Diane.
Oh, Diane Gabaldon. She writes the Outlander series.
Okay.
Rated.
And then Laura said, I know what I like, but I can't always analyze why.
Right.
And for me, I think it starts off with and then you can take it from here. If I find a bit of dialogue that I like, I underline it. Or if I find a description of story world that I like, I underline it. And first off, it starts with observation and just going, that caught my eye, that I read again, or that made me laugh out loud, or that stirred up my emotions. That's the first thing, is just be observant when you read again when something makes you want to read it again, or a whole scene makes you want to read it again. And then you have to go back and go, why? What part of that scene pulled me in? So that's the first, that the beginning of it is just being observant. And don't be afraid to mark a book. It's a book. You're not destroying it. You're studying it. So that's the first part. I don't know what you would add to that, Susie.
No, you're absolutely spot on. You're absolutely spot on. Start with what you like about it. I always kept, I don't have it with me right now, but I always kept notebooks of brilliant writing. And I'd be like, oh, I love this. And I would write this little bit here and write this little bit here. And it would start to inspire me. And now I love the Kindle thing where you can like highlight in a Kindle document and you can see what you like, you know, as you go through it. So she's absolutely right. Highlight what you like, figure out why you like it. And that takes a little bit more analysis, and then kind of go out and then read another book by that author and see if you like that same thing. I always feel sad when I love a book by an author and then I read the next one and it's not as good and I go, oh, so then I have to start my search over again. But but the fact is that, yeah, start with what you like. And everybody, that's the thing. Everybody has a different kind of style. No one style is right. And that's why I like to start with books that we like as opposed to method books. And method books are great. I write them, so I love them. But you want to also combine that with your own style. So so look at, now you say, okay, I need to learn dialogue or story world or overall story crafting or emotional layering or whatever. It's always good to add a book or a retreat or something to your education so that you can take sort of application and apply it to theory, you know, and kind of understand how they go together. And I think that's really important. I actually think that's more important than going to a critique group, because sometimes a critique group aren't on the same list as you are. They aren't on the same mindset. But going to a critique group would be also among those things that are important. I think a writer's group, like if you had a coffee writer's group and you're all reading the same book and you're all talking about it and learning from it, that to me would be super valuable because you would be able to talk about that. But I always veer away from critique groups because I always feel like somebody might not like it and then they change your voice. It'd be much better to have a craft partner that said, oh, let's work on dialogue or whatever together. So that's just my personal bent. But you guys can do what feels right in your own eyes. So so that's kind of figuring out what it is you're going to write, what you're going to work on. And that just helps you think that out. And like Beth said, come up with a time, a system, a goal or something to accomplish that. Don't just say, oh, I'm going to read. No. Say, I'm going to read this many books at this time and, you know, figure it out so that you actually are strategic about it. So for me, it is on Friday nights, I'm looking for a new book to read. And so, you know, I'm looking, and then I read all day Saturday or often, you know, throughout the weekend, and I'm a really fast reader, so I get it usually done by Sunday night. So, but that's not everybody. Maybe you read twice a week. Maybe you read once a month. You know, figure it out so that you actually get it done. I think that's the Jan says we need more Susie retreats. Yes, actually, just let's all get together and have coffee and talk. That would be the best. So if you just want to come over, that'd be great. So, all right. So now let's talk about your novels. All right, so now that we've talked a little bit about how you're going to develop as an author, and I left that kind of nebulous because I really want to focus in on your writing. All right, I like to start with, what is your core message as an author? And we've talked about this before at My Book Therapy, but to me, there's got to be a reason why I write. There's got to be elements about me that I'm putting in my stories that make my stories unique. So if you know anything about me and my stories, I really like to write about truth and grace. And so first we have the lie they believe, we have the truth that sets them free, and then I'm all about grace and God giving second chances. And so all of my books have grace in them. Rachel's books all have joy in them in some way. She's very much, her stories are all about finding the joy and finding your destiny. And that's very much what Rachel's books are. Jim Rubart writes about freedom. All of his books are about being set free to go live this life that God has planned for you. And Beth, at one point we talked about your message. What was your core message? I'm trying to remember.
A lot of I go back to the fact that your mistakes don't define you, and that God can use you no matter what the mistakes are. And I also write a lot about God steps into our messiness and meets us in our messiness.
It's good. It's really
I'm
good.
A lot about relationship and messiness and God meeting us in our messiness.
I totally can see that. I totally see that in all your books. That's fantastic. And so, and that's the thing. I think you need to understand who you are as a writer, as you, and it's not necessarily a deliberate thing. It's sort of a knowledge. It kind of produces itself. But once you kind of understand it, you kind of can focus it a little bit more. But you're I'm not going to say that you want to, you don't want to pry it into your story, but understand that that's sort of who you're, what you're writing about, and let yourself put it into your story, because that's your unique message that you have as a writer. So now we're going to take and say, we write best from our passions, the things that we love. So I want you to look through what you wrote last year, all the bodies of work, whether it's a blog, an article, a devotional, a Bible study, a novel, a novella, whatever. And I want to ask you, what did you love best? What did you love best about writing that? What was your favorite thing to write? So my favorite thing to write last year was probably the last book I wrote of the Christensen family, because it was about brothers and redemption and grace and second chances. And to me, it just kind of came together, the culmination of that story, and I loved it. And for me, when I figured out what I, why I loved it because I love happy endings, but I love long sagas and this sort of thing. And I was reading, again, Diana Gabaldon's the whole Outlander series. And I love all the characters. And I loved, my favorite story was the third one, if you've ever read it. And so I looked at that and I went, okay, what is my passion? My passion is family and relationships. That's going to help me a lot as I figure out my future. So I'm just going to pin that there and I'm going to come back to it. Now, what did I struggle with the most? I struggled a little bit with blogs. I struggled a little bit with articles because I just didn't have a lot of time to write them. And I had, you know, a couple other projects on the table that I kind of struggled to get out that were not as fun for me. And they were, you know, shorter books. They were, one was a historical that I sort of kind of abandoned after a while because it was just too challenging to get it done. My passion wasn't there. And I think that we, when we are writing our passion, it becomes this, I don't want to say easy, but it becomes this flowy thing. I don't know if you've ever been there when you're writing, but you're like, some. And I often talk about how writing is like tugging an elephant down a dirt road. And when I first get started, I'm like tugging the elephant. He doesn't want to get up. He's on his butt, you know, and he's not. And then finally I get the elephant, coax him up, and he's sort of like walking along, but he's resisting. And by the end of the book, the elephant is like charging and flying over me, and I have to get out of the way. To me, that's a great story. But a story that I struggle with is when the elephant never gets up, right? He's just sitting there and every scene is like, get up. And he never, ever gets up. And if that's you, then it might be because you just don't have a passion for that story. And so I think that look through what you love to write, because I'm telling you right now, life is too short to spend a lot of time writing stuff you don't like. And so I think that when we write stuff we like, it fulfills our life with vitality and joy, and we prosper because we're wise, because we're using our gifts. So take some analysis and look at that. So Beth, what did you love writing last year?
Well, the interesting thing is last year I was finishing up writing the Destination Wedding series, the novel and the novella that are coming out this year. And yeah. I really enjoyed them because even though they're Destination Wedding series, I still went deep. I still was dealing with relationships and messiness. But all that time I was thinking, do I want to keep doing this? Is this me? And 2016 is going to be a changing year for me. Because when I thought about what is it that I really want to write, it goes back to my novel, Somebody Like You. Mm-hmm. And that, for me, is closer to what I want to write. It's not even exactly it. I want to go further with that kind of novel. So even as I was writing the Destination Wedding series this year, I was already thinking about what comes next. and how is it going to be me and what I really truly want to write. So 2016 is going to be a change for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm excited about that.
That is great. I love that. And I really see that in you too. And I think that when we are excited about what we write, then the words do sort of come to us, even though the elephant is still hard to get up because we have to do so much work to get the story on the page. We like the elephant. And like Lynn was saying, she got the elephant moving, but she didn't like the elephant. Well, if you don't like the elephant, then don't spend, 6 months with the elephant, So
I love the stories. I loved them. I had fun with them.
Right.
Do I want to keep writing those?
Right.
No, I think I want to go back to something. No, I know I want to go back to something more like somebody like you.
Yeah, deeper, profound, something that touches your heart as you write. Absolutely.
Somebody Like You is my hardest novel to write. You know that. Rachel knows that. But that's what I want to write.
It's good. Yes. Okay. So on that, so then if you could rate your favorite writing projects, including genres, rank them from 1 to 5 with 1 being your favorite. So yours was Somebody Like You, which was romance, but it was also Little Women's fiction because it wasn't your typical romance. And so it was almost like a general market drama in some ways, So you had lots of lots of different kind of overlaps there. Although it was a romance, it wasn't your typical romance, I would definitely say. It was deeper. So, although romances can be also very deep. So, for me, my favorite writing projects were my Big Family series that I wrote. That would be 1. 2 would be the romantic suspense hotshot series I've been working on. 3 would probably be Limelight, which I finished, so that was good. I did that for my book therapy. 4 would probably be the historical that I was working on that I tabled. And then 5 would probably be blogs and articles. So, I have to figure that out. So now I'm going to go to why was it my favorite? Because I love family. I'm a huge fan of, I love my family and I love to see other families. Okay, so that's great. What projects cost more time and energy than they were worth? All right, so for me, a little bit was the blogging and a lot of the stuff that I did for that didn't necessarily pan out. Articles that I wrote and interviews that I wrote for articles, for magazines, I didn't, I did it for marketing purposes, but, I didn't love those. Some of my, so probably my historical book that I started cost me more energy because I did a lot of research and stuff on it. So, okay, so now I know, okay, I kind of probably veer away from that and veer towards the stuff that I love. And I think it's really important to look at our projects and go, that didn't pan out. That wasn't a good choice. And I want to say that even in my historical books that I've sold, even though they've won awards, they have not sold like my contemporary books. And that needs to be something you need to think about as you go forward with a career. You have to go, what worked and what didn't? Even though I can write historicals, even though I've won awards for historicals, for some reason they didn't resonate with readers. Although some of my readers are like, oh, those are my favorites of yours, they didn't overall resonate in sales. So for me, I'm like, well, maybe if I was going to invest my time, I should invest it in the stuff that really does well and that I love. All right. So Jan asked, did you ever bring back those projects that didn't pan out later on? Yeah, I do. If I feel like they keep tickling me and I have to deal with them. But I only do it if I feel like I don't have something else going on or if I can afford it. I'm not going to sacrifice something that's working that I love for a project that might have died and might not have life. So, yeah, I don't know. And in fact, I have an example of that. I loved Nothing But Trouble, that series with PJ Sugar. But it was a great series. It won an award. But it just did not sell. And I kind of kept trying to bring that to life. And I loved writing it, but it just didn't sell as well as some of my other ones. And it was like, okay, well, maybe it just wasn't supposed to be great. So that's, yeah, I know. I love PJ too. She's great. All right. So now let's take a look. Let's look at the trends. And that was, what genres or writing trends are intriguing to you? Okay, now that gets really specific into, okay, so maybe you love writing historicals, but you don't necessarily see historical selling. What to do about that? Well, let's take a look at the trends that are going on. There are some historicals that are selling in different time periods. World War II seems to be doing pretty well. Hallie Bridgman, as an indie author, writes World War II, and she sells books like crazy. You know, and you've got Sarah Sundin, who writes historicals for Revell. She writes in World War II. So, you know, you have to kind of look at what trends are going on and what's intriguing to you. So some things that are intriguing to me is that they have this new thing where people are writing episodes. And so they take a story and they write an episode of the story and they make it sort of a serial episode. And I thought, oh, that's kind of cool. One of the other trends is that books are getting shorter. So a lot of books are 40,000 to 60,000 words if you're going indie and you don't need to write a 90,000 word book. So that's something that's kind of a trend. Family series are big again, which is great. That fits my model really well. So it's always good to kind of take this aside and go, what's the trend? Is there any trends that fit with who I am, right? Because now I can sort of jump on that wave and ride it a little bit. I don't want to say write to trends, because that's not you. You have to write your story. You have to write your passion. But if there's a trend that fits your passion, here's an example, Cindy Woodsmall. She wrote Amish for years before it was ever popular. She had Amish friends. That was totally her genre. Well, guess what? The trend came along and whoop, this was great for Cindy, because suddenly she was writing Amish with a trend. And so that worked out really well. So Ron says lots of World War I nonfiction going on right now. Dual time stories, time slips. Those are really, really popular. World War II is very popular. So Beth, did you want to piggyback on that?
No, I was just mentioning Rachel, and she's really hit well with writing the dual time frame.
Yes.
She's also done well with the Royals. I mean, that has done very well for her, and she really thought that out about how readers are always going to love the Royals. Mm-hmm. So why not take advantage of that?
That was really brilliant. That was her saying, what am I good at? I'm really good at low country stuff. And so she took low country Southern girls and she paired them with royals. She came up with the Once Upon a Prince, Princess Ever After, and To Catch a Prince. So, and again, yeah, I mean, there's royals always stay in style. So she did a great job of pairing those two things. And then with The Wedding Dress and The Wedding Shop and The Wedding Chapel, she took that time slip concept. And she really, I remember when she conceived The Wedding Dress, it was sort of around the time that was the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants. Mm-hmm. And she was like, what if you took a wedding dress and did that? You know, of course she did it 1,000 times better. But the idea is that, well, the traveling pants was cute too, but the idea was so much deeper and it had this resonance. And for her, it was about the gospel and how it had traveled through the ages. And so the point being is that she took what she was good at, her passion, and she paired it with the trends. And so that's what I'm going to ask you to do. Look at the trends. Which ones are intriguing to you, whether it's traditional publishing, indie publishing, genre, whatever. What is something that you think, that's going to fit really well with me? All right. And it's important to think about that, because now we're talking about being professional and we're saying, okay, how do we sell our stuff? Well, to some extent, we do need to think about the trends and things that are popular. So maybe you're like, well, I like to write books. I want to write indie. I like romance. So one of the trends is these shorter books. Well, maybe you write 45,000 word novels and you, instead of writing these long novels, and you say, I'm going to go indie with them. You know, that could be how you put that together. All right. Can the trends fit your core message or vision statement, and can they be adapted for the genre or projects you love? So I'm going to just get transparent here and tell you about my journey through these questions. So as I came to last year, 2015, I knew I was good at writing family series. And I had just, the beginning of 2015, I wrote the ending of Owen's story and I loved it. It was so much fun to turn in. It was so much fun to write. It was fun to finish. Everything about it was great. And I knew I wanted to do that, but I knew I couldn't continue on in Minnesota. I had to kind of change that up a little bit. And I thought, what are some of the trends? Well, at the time Chicago Fire, Chicago PD, and Chicago Med were starting a new kind of thing where Chicago Fire was starting to do this overlap with this new Chicago Med thing. And I was watching these kind of shows about these teams of people, you know, Scorpion came out last year, these teams of people that are sort of like function as a family and they solve problems together. And I looked at that and I went, could I create a team of people that save other people? Okay, because I was kind of into the SR thing, SAR thing. And then, and that was another thing I liked. I'd written these Team Hope books way back in the past and they did really well. And so I thought, and they were these Montana books in the past and they did well. So I took the Christiansens, Team Hope, Montana, and the love for these kind of, you know, search and rescue, fire rescue kind of shows, ER is an example. And I put them together and I created a series called Montana Rescue. And it was based on this team of people. But I also knew that I kind of wanted to check out the indie stuff because to me that was kind of interesting. So I thought, what goes well with indie? Well, romantic suspense does pretty well with indie. Romance does well with indie. And I thought, what if, and I'd been kind of thinking about this Hotshot series for quite some time, for years. And I thought, what if I turn that into an indie project? And what if I made all my indie books connect with my Team Hope or my Montana Rescue books so that we're going to call this Montana Fire, and there's going to be people on Montana Fire that you're going to meet in Montana Search and Rescue. And these are little books, like 50,000 words, that introduce the bigger players over here. So they have their own story, but in the story, you meet all the other people that are in these series here. And now I'm going to publish these to help boost the reader's love of these, the bigger ones. And these are like big 100,000 word books as opposed to these little ones. So I thought, okay, I could probably do that. Interesting. Now let's see if I can make it work. So what I did is I started looking at my writing habits and going, all right, so let's just talk about that for a second. So now that I have my big brainstorm idea of what I want to do, I got to figure out how to make it happen or if it can happen. So the first thing is we're going to talk about how much free time that you have. Now, I say free time because not everybody here is a professional writer. I'm fortunate. I get to spend 8 hours a day writing if I want. But not everybody is like that. And even I have other responsibilities. I have my book therapy. I have family. Occasionally, I'm supposed to cook dinner. I don't know what. But, you know, and so you have to look at your time. So look at your free time and then ask yourself how much of that free time do you use to write? And so, and you can, I don't know how you, what you think about for free time. When I was younger, I used to look at free time as time the kids, after the kids went to bed, or time after they got done homeschooling. And, you know, when my husband would come home, Saturday mornings was often free time. Sunday afternoons was often free time. And so I kind of looked at my spaces and I looked at, well, how much of that time then do I use for family time and how much time do I use to write? And then I got really specific and I said, how many hours a day do I average? How many hours a week do I average? So when I was younger, when I first started, I averaged 4 hours a week. That's all I had. It was Saturday mornings from 8 to 12. That's the only time I could have. So that's fine. But now I need to, and there's no judgment here. It's just, it is what your life is. It's just, you know, you have to, there's, you don't have to have more than 4 hours a week. You might have only 2 hours a week, whatever it is. But it will help you figure out what you can produce, right? So now you need to ask how many words or scenes can you write in that writing session? So I write about 1,000 words an hour. So that I could possibly write a 3,000 word scene in that 4 hour chunk because I probably need a little bit of warm up and, you know, I got to edit a little bit as I go and I need to do some research. So I'm going to say one scene of 3,000 words or one chapter of 3,000 words, maybe, because maybe I'm going to make my scenes about 1,500 words each, however I want to do it. So I'm going to look at my writing session and I'm going to say, okay, let's say I average my scenes are 1,500 words each, and I'm going to write a chapter that's 3,000 words. That means I can write two scenes in one chapter in that writing session. Now you guys can do it however you want. A lot of times what I do is I say, I'm going to write, like for example, I usually write 5,000 words a day. That's a pretty big day, but that's, and so what happens, and I need about an hour on each side. So I usually write about 8 hours a day. So in those 5,000 words, about each, I have about three scenes. It's usually one chapter. So I have about three scenes. So it's about 1,800 words per scene. So now I I've moved my day into three sections, one 1800 word scene, another 1800 word scene, another 1800 word scene, something like that. And that helps me figure out how much time I'm going to need to write a book. All right. So before we put that into a grid, we're going to say, how much time do you spend for professional growth and expanding your base? Again, do you read on Saturdays? Do you read in the evenings? A lot of times I do my professional growth in the evenings because during the week, because I figure it's a weekday. So I'm going to read, you know, professionally in the evening. I also spend an hour in the morning reading. And so, you know, maybe you're going to do it then. It's important to slot that in, as we were talking earlier. Beth has a time that she probably reads every week to so that she can get her Goodreads done. Go, girl. That's good, right? I love it. Mary's hidden out in the car while her daughter's at ballet, nearly 2 hours. That's fantastic. I can't tell you how many times I have sat in a bleachers at a basketball game working or reading. And I say to my kids, when you're in the game, I'm watching you. If you're not in the game, I'm reading. Sorry, so get in the game. So, you know, I went to rehearsal at the theater and sit in the back and I would work while the kids were rehearsing. It's just, you know, the kids don't need you to watch them every second. You can sit in the car. So Mary, that's fantastic. Beth said about volleyball tournaments when her daughter isn't competing. That's great. So these are all great time snatches, and that's what you should be doing. So now let's look at what distractions should be eliminated. You can have, like, here's, this could sound crazy. I schedule in distraction time. I say, for the next 20 minutes, I'm going to allow myself to look at Facebook. I set myself a little buzzer, and then I let myself look at Facebook. But that's usually if I've gotten up early, or I'm sitting in the car, I didn't bring a book along, whatever. So schedule in your time wasters. Otherwise, delete them from your life, because you really don't have to know what so-and-so had for dinner, or, you know, the time hack for making macaroni and cheese, or all that kind of stuff. So Ron says, I love my Overdrive app. Oh, it must be an app that keeps you from spending too much time or something. We'll have to check that out. That sounds good. All right. So now let's get specific. Based on what you love and any market opportunities, what would you like to write this year? All right. So I'm writing romantic suspense and big family dramas. That's what I want to write. That's my big idea that I had for 2015, right? So first, we're going to start with that. What do you want to write? Now, and Beth's going to write deep romantic family drama. No? What are you writing this year?
I'm writing women's fiction.
Women's fiction. That's what somebody like you is more like, women's fiction. Yeah.
With a romantic thread, probably, but it's going to be women's fiction.
Yay! I love it. I love it. Okay, that's good. All right, so now, here's how it goes. Look at your average word count per writing session. So remember how I told you I wrote about 3,000 words per writing session? And I'm going to look at the length of each writing session, and I'm going to compare that to my free time or writing space each week. So for example, if I average one scene of 2,000 words per writing session, and that takes 3 hours, and you have three writing sessions a week, then you could produce 6,000 words a week, or for 9 hours a time. So if I've confused you, basically look at your time, figure out how many words you can write during that time, and you'll figure out what your weekly total is. That make sense? Okay. So if your weekly total is, for example, 6,000 words a week, you will need 10 weeks to complete a 60,000 word book, 15 weeks to complete a 90,000 word book, right? Now I'm just being practical here, because I don't know about you guys, but for me, I can't just go, yeah, I'll write that book, and then just think it's going to happen. I have to schedule in when I'm going to write, and I've got to meet my goal of making that work. Otherwise, what happens is that if I don't sit down and go, Susie, you've got 3 hours to come up with 1,800 words, ready, go. And you're not getting out of that chair till you get your 1,800 words done, I don't care how much you want to. Because if you don't get out of that, if you don't get those 1,800 words done, then you're going to have to find that time another day. And you don't have that time another day. So sit down and do the work and stop complaining. Okay, so that's what I tell myself. Because if I don't schedule that time, then I don't get the book done. Now, there, this is why this is the secret to your success, you guys, because the reality is that people are like, yeah, I'm writing, but writing is hard. It's hard. It's emotionally challenging and it's just really hard. And so if we don't force ourselves to do it, we'll find other things to do. I'll empty the dishwasher. I'll clean the toilet. I'll do all sorts of stuff instead of write, but I force myself to sit down and do it. And so, you need to figure out how many words you can get done in a writing session. All right. And then you need to figure out how many writing sessions you have a week, do the math and figure out how many words you can complete a week. Now look at your kind of book you want to write, and you should be able to see a rough estimate of how much time it will take to write that book. All right. Now, before you get started here, you're going to look at the calendar for the year, and you need to just make sure you've done a couple things. One, have you scheduled in vacations and free time with your family and friends? Now, I know you're all like, whatever, but the reality is that this is why we do what we do, and it's important to spend time with your people. And if you don't spend time with your people, then they will not like your writing, and then they won't support you. So you have to do that. So I always do vacations. I do thinking space so that I have days where I can just think. I know that sounds crazy. I have mental health days where the words won't appear and I need to go to the spa. I schedule in those a couple times where I'm like, forget the writing today, you know, and it's just good to do. What other necessarily life space do you need? So like my daughter got married a couple of years ago. I gave myself space for that. Graduation parties, birthdays, you know, whatever it is, schedule those in. And so then you have those set before you start scheduling in your writing. Okay. Knee replacement counts, Claire. Yes. All right. Schedule in great photos with your family. Yeah, that's right, Terry. Absolutely. Now, let's sum up for a little bit. What books do you want to write? All right. Do you want to write one historical? Do you want to write two or three romantic suspense? Do you want to write two contemporaries? Do you want to write one women's fiction? Beth, go for it.
I'm just putting a little sub question in here.
Yes.
What contests might you want to enter?
Oh, yes. That's a really good point too. Yeah. I didn't even think about contests. And so, yeah, put those deadlines on your calendar, and then figure out how much it's going to take for you to prepare for that. That's really good, Beth. Yes. So now, what books do you want to write? What is the projected length of each book? How many words can you write per writing session? We just talked about that. How much time do you need for each writing session? We talked about that. And then do the math. How many writing sessions do you need to schedule to complete your story? All right. So for me, I've got this system down. I need 20 writing sessions to complete a 100,000 word story because I write 5,000 words per writing session, and I have three scenes per writing session. All right. So for me, I look at the calendar and I figure out, and I travel a lot. So I figure out this day, this day, this day, this day, and I find 20 days in a 2 or 3 month period where I can work on my story. And those are just my writing days. And then I know this will be done at X amount of time. So once you figure out how many writing sessions you need to write those into your calendar. Those are your writing session days, and they don't change. Well, you can change them for mental health days or whatever, but Beth, go ahead.
Okay. Laura had a question, but she sees the answer coming up. So
yes,
go with it.
Right. All right. So now we're going to write those into your calendar. Wait, is that right? Yes. Okay. Yeah. It's coming up. Now we want to add that amount of time for research, rewrites, and editing. So if it takes me 20 writing sessions to write the book, I'm going to schedule 20 editing and research sessions. I might do 5 on one side and a couple more in the middle, and then I'm going to add some at the end. Why? Because when you're writing fast, which I encourage you guys to do, you're going to have to go back and you're going to have to rewrite and you're going to have to edit, and you have to schedule in time for that. It doesn't just happen. So for me, it takes double amount of that time. So 20 sessions to write, 20 sessions to do the research and editing and rewrites and editing. And you may be faster than me, and that's great. But for now, I would suggest go ahead and schedule in that time. This slide now is worth a screenshot. Thanks, Lynn. All right. So let's do some scenarios. So let's say you want to write one historical. Your estimated length is 100,000 words. You can afford two writing sessions a week, and you write about 2,500 words per writing session, which is about 5,000 words a week. Well, you've got 25 weeks to completion for your rough draft and 50 weeks to finish your rewrite, edit, polish, and pitch. All right. Well, that's about a whole year if you're writing twice a week. All right. Now, if you want to write faster, you could add it another day, and then you could do the math and it would shorten that time. But now you can say, okay, if I just show up 2 days a week and I get my 2,500 words in, and then I allow my time to rewrite, edit, polish, and pitch, which we could come up with some sort of strategy for you guys to do that, you would have a book done in a year. And now you've got your 100,000 word book done, which is a passion of your heart. And you've probably got some, you know, you've probably looked at trends and all that kind of stuff. So now you've got a goal where you're like, I'm going to write this book. And in a year, you could say, or maybe you say, you know, I want to bring this book to ACFW and pitch it then. Okay, do the math, figure out how long that is until then. You might need to switch up some of your weeks. And so you have a couple weeks where you have extra writing time. Now let's take a look at a 3-book contemporary romantic suspense series, and now it's 60,000 words each. Well, let's say you can write 3 times a week, 2 on Saturdays. Let's say you have 2 writing sessions on the Saturdays. You have 1 Saturday morning and Saturday afternoon, and you have 1 on Tuesday nights, right? So you write 2,000 words each writing session. Let's say you've got 3 hours on Saturday morning, 3 hours on Saturday afternoon, 3 hours on Tuesday nights. Okay, so you can write 6,000 words a week. Well, that's 10 weeks to completion. That's 10 more weeks for research, rewriting, editing, and proofing, unless you can shorten that. And then you've got 20 weeks total per book. Well, if you do the math, you've got 60 weeks. Well, unfortunately, there's only 52 weeks in a year. All right. So you're 8 weeks over. So that's 24 work sessions that you need to sprinkle in throughout the year. So, well, that's not so bad. You could do one extra writing session every other week. So, for example, this year we're not having pep talks every Thursday night. We're having there's a few months where we don't have pep talks. You could write those nights. And you could probably figure out 24 extra working sessions. Is there that would be, you know, basically, like I said, one extra session every other week. So, and you would have your 3-book series done. So the key here is to get a big picture view of your goals and say, this is my plan. This is what I want to do. I've built in my family. I've taken care of my priorities. Now, where is my writing time going to be? And how am I going to strategize how I'm going to get this done? Now, I do this every year. And actually, guys, I have like a 5-year plan of how I do this. And I change it up every year. But before I sign a contract, I always look and say, when am I going to get this contract done? And I make sure that I've laid this all out so that I have time. I don't just leave it and go, well, it'll happen. I'm very strategic about when I show up to write so that I know I can meet my deadline. And then here's the key. When you make your deadline, you get paid. And now you can make a living at writing. So, but even if you're indie published, you still have a deadline. And now you have to get your book up and you can start making money that way. So this is the key to actually becoming a professional author, is figuring out how you're going to get your work done. Beth, go ahead. Did you have something you wanted to say?
No, this is all great.
Oh, okay. Yay, good.
This is good stuff.
So the other secret to my success is deadline. Give yourself a deadline. You need to have it done by this time. I'm telling you guys, it's actually freeing. You're like, I got to get this done. If you don't do it, here's what happens. Oh, I didn't write today. Shoot. Wow, I'm kind of a failure because I said I was going to, but I didn't. Oh, the book will eventually get done, I think. I hope. No, deadline says I've got a deadline on the 24th. I need to make sure I get it done. So I need to show up for this. And once you, like, I get so excited. I'm like, I get done with my writing for the day and I'm like, I'm free. I did my work. I don't panic because I know that tomorrow I'll show up and do the work. So I can go out with my husband, or I can go spend time with people, or I can go watch Man on the High Castle, you know, whatever I want, because I've done my work and I don't have to panic that it won't get done. But if you don't set a deadline, it's a nebulous thing. And you're always like, oh, I'm not done with my book yet. Therefore I must be a failure. No, you're not. You just have to allow yourself time to write. So, Jean says, even better, make sure you tell someone your deadline and have them hold your feet to the fire. That's good. Accountability partners. Yes. Angela says, are our friends. Yes. Oh, very, very good. All right. Summary. What are you going to write this year? What days will you write? And when will you have it finished? Those are your three big questions that you need to now ponder as you're writing. Now, if you're writing a series, or if you're writing just one book or whatever, if you're writing one book, this is not a problem. You can go back to the SEQ and you can figure out how to plan your story and everything. If you're writing a series, we are going to have a class coming up in a couple months, or no, not, I think it's in a few weeks here, about writing a series. And I'm going to teach you how to do that so that you can understand the different kinds of series that are out there. But before you do that, you need to lay out how you're going to get it done. And so that you can see the scope. It might be that you're like, I want to write a series. And then you look at your life and you go, what am I thinking? I don't have that much time to write a series, you know, or I am going to write a series, but it's going to take me, you know, a year and a half, or I can't write a 60,000 word book in the amount of time I have, but I want to get 3 books out. Maybe I'll adjust and I'll write a 40,000 word book. That's another way to go at it. So looking at your time and planning it out, it's sort of like money, right? We take our money and we sign our money where it's going to go. And once it, and then it behaves for us and it goes the places it's going to go. And then when we want to go spend money, we say, well, we've got that money there, we'll go spend it, right? So it gives you such freedom. Same thing, take your time, put it out and figure out how you're going to spend your time. And now you go and spend it. And then you don't worry if you haven't written anymore, because you know, oh, I'm going to write at the next writing session and I'm going to get this book done. So I hope that was helpful, you guys. It's just really a matter of looking at who you are, what you want to do, what you want to write, what your real life is like, and setting up reasonable expectations for yourself so that you don't end the year going, man, I really wanted to write a book. Where did my time go? We don't want that for 2016. We want, wow, I wrote 2 books this year. Who knew? And now they're getting published, or now I'm writing a proposal, or now I'm going to go to the Deep Thinkers Retreat and see Susie and Beth and see everybody there. It's going to be fun. So that's something that we'd love to do too. By the way, we do have 2 spaces left in the Deep Thinkers Retreat. They're upper queen bunks, so they're cheaper. So if you're interested in going to the Deep Thinkers Retreat, I think registration closes in like 2 weeks. So email us and we'll hook you up. So anyway, hope this was helpful, you guys. It was so great to see you again. I've missed you. I missed Beth. And it's just great to be back in the saddle. Next week, I think our class is going to be on, it's Build a Book. We're going to be finishing up our Build a Book series. And I have a special gift for you guys. I'm so excited. So, but it's going to be a fun class. We'll wrap up that series and I'll teach you guys how I ended it, and then how we go forward and pitch and promote it. And it'll be a fun night. It's actually my birthday and I'm spending it with you guys. And I love that. So we'll have a little birthday party and, it'll be a fun night. So thanks again for being here, Beth. Thanks for being here. It's just lovely to see you again. And you guys are awesome. We love you. We know you can spend your time anywhere else on Thursday nights, and we love that you spend it with us. So until next week, go plan your year and write something brilliant. Bye.
Bye.